Hi, and welcome to another Applied Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Reeve. This time, I sit down with Diane Gilliand of the School of Access. Diane talks about the steps in which applied learning plays an important role in the programs she teaches. I hope you listen in and enjoy.
So, in the School of Access, in Academic and Career Foundations Department, I teach Building Employment Success for Tomorrow. It's a career exploration course with five programs. It's a program with five courses in it, and it runs in cohort structure for 8 weeks, four times a year. So I have a cohort of students that I work through a career exploration program with for 8 weeks.
Great.
Yeah, and from September to the end of April, I have four different cohorts.
Okay, mm-hmm. So sort of every 2 months,
yeah.
More or less.
Yeah.
Okay, what are the values of teaching and learning that inspire you to start, like, sort of, just in a general sense, doing that, a bit of applied learning, that learning by doing?
Mm-hmm. I think it's respecting differences in the classroom, different ways of learning that the students bring to their education, their learning experience, hands-on, musical. You know, some people like to read, some people like to speak, exchange ideas, learn through social engagement with other people. All the different learning styles that come into the classroom. You know, learning with images and pictures and
yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I really have social justice values too.
Right.
So, the old structure of standing up in the front of the classroom and passing along information, like, does not work.
Right.
Yeah, I really want to respect the diverse knowledge that students bring to the classroom. They have life experiences. I work with three generations in my classroom, so I really believe I value the instruction of the whole group. Like, the whole group teaches all of us.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We work to teach each other.
Okay. And you've talked a little bit about the program. Can you talk about some of the ways in the program, just broadly now,
mm-hmm.
that you use a hands-on approach,
mm-hmm.
like a technique, a tactic, mm-hmm. a thing in that 8 weeks that makes you think of applied learning?
Mm-hmm. So we work in a, I'm not sure I'll answer this directly, but we work in a circle format.
Mm-hmm.
So the students see each other. In the classroom, we do, like, from the very beginning, we're wanting the students to get to know each other. So they interview each other on the very first day with some fun questions like, what's your culture, heritage, what's your favorite meal, all of those things. And then in the second day, another kind of hands-on activity, so getting to know each other, is we do a campus scavenger hunt tour where I have the students work in small groups, and they have a map of places to go and explore the college, and they take pictures of each other
right.
in their small groups in the different locations. Every day we work with either with presenting a topic, having brainstorming their mm-hmm. ideas about the topic. So, for example, transferable skills and strengths, we talk about a lot with, we work a lot with their stories about what life experience, like, if you play video games, what transferables, tell us a little bit about the games you're involved in, and who else plays video games. And we just collect stories about their engagement with video gaming, then we look at it and say, well, what skills and strengths were in that story?
Right.
We bring out those skills and strengths. What other career areas could you transfer these skills and strengths to? Yeah.
So there's definitely a strength-based approach.
It's definitely a strength-based, hugely, yeah. Strength-based approach, a circle approach, anchored in stories, anchored in sharing knowledge, working, to talk with other people in that social engagement way, in either pairs or triads or fours. And then sometimes I do all voices activity.
Right.
I mix it up with all voices. So And everyone has the right to pass.
Right.
Yeah, I wrote that in the very beginning because I have students who are really struggle with social anxiety,
right.
Depression, manic depression. I just had a young man struggling with schizophrenia.
Right.
So, yeah, lots of different... I mean, I also have folks who are you know, reasonably well and, you know, just in a normal career transition. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm answering your question about hands-on learning.
No, but you're drawing a picture of the whole of the learning. Yeah,
the whole of the learning.
And I think there'll be spaces to connect because there's a multitude of approaches in any situation. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you're more than, you've built in all of these ideas into the way you teach.
Every day is a mixture because they're in the classroom 5 hours a day. So I don't want them sitting too long.
Yeah.
I want them up and out of their desks and moving around the room. And we'll get them posting their ideas on different flip charts around the room. We'll go out for a walk to talk about wellness and self-care during, that stressful time of career change.
Right.
We'll do mindfulness exercises. We'll talk about the fixed versus growth mindset. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Getting out of the, not sitting for too long is important and not listening to just one voice for too long is important.
Right. So you've sort of led us into nicely a discussion a bit about intention.
Mm-hmm.
As you've built and worked with this program, mm-hmm. how do you decide what activities mm-hmm. Are the best way for students to learn a particular, whatever it is you're trying to learn? Maybe it's recognizing their strengths, mm-hmm. or maybe it's working towards putting those down on a CV or a resume. Mm-hmm. Are there activities what's your intention mm-hmm. to take a concept like, okay, by the end of, yeah, and then build it into your course.
So let's take the example of the skill of communication, the skill of listening, because that's a key point for key employability skill that we teach in the classroom. So, and listening begins from day one because we work in the cohort and it's a big part of team building, so they're interrelated. So to teach the skill of listening, I will introduce the topic. We will role model good listening versus bad listening and ask the students to be concrete and specific observers, but drawing a distinction between making assumptions about what's going on versus really observing, you know, my tone, my body language, and making those concrete observations. And then we brainstorm those on the board, and then we'll watch kind of a fun instructive video. Candace, forget her name. It's a TED Talk. We'll watch a TED Talk and then ask them to talk about what they agreed or disagreed with in the pairs. And then I'll have them identify what are their listening strengths. And then what's one barrier for listening that they can identify in themselves. So it's a self-reflection. So they watch, they observe, they listen, they talk about it. Then they go into that inner reflective exercise. Okay, what are my listening strengths? What's one barrier or bad habit that I have that I can work on reducing? So, and then I send them out into the field. I give them a field assignment where go into your world after you've identified what your strong points are and one area you want to improve. Go out and practice those strengths more, augment them, and practice reducing, you know,
that bad habit,
or the barrier habit, and then come back and report. I gather those reports, those field assignments, and I collate them, and I then give them a summary of all that data that they gave me as field agents, you know, and they can hear how their colleagues put this into action and what the results were.
Right.
So that's an example of how I go through a concept.
So this talks a lot then to our second idea of preparation and planning.
Yeah.
So which it seems like you're deeply ready for. So how do you know when you're ready to try a new applied learning, hands-on type of learning activity?
How do I know when I'm ready?
Yeah.
Well,
or do you know?
Well, it's always a risk. You know, my stomach, I get nervous Recently, I've been teaching a conflict resolution workshop and also having guests come in the past 5 years to teach it, like a mediator in the city. I've had our ombudsman work on this conflict resolution. And it's been 5 years I've been honing this lesson plan. And I think it's just recently that I thought, okay, this is it. For now, anyway. You know, it really worked well. The students had positive feedback about it. So, you know, I hone it. Some lessons are easier than others.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I'm working with Zach Sikowski. He brings his learning skills expertise to anything we do, and we continue to modify,
right.
You know, adjust and modify.
How do you begin? Like, if you're thinking about you said this is a 5-year process.
One
lesson plan. Yeah,
as an example of
yeah.
Other ones are less, way less time than that.
Right.
Because I've inherited also a rich
right.
curriculum from an instructor who worked before me for 20 years.
How do you consider and think about when you're talking about, like, and it seems like your course is always very active, so it doesn't. I'm not just thinking about applied learning, but all the methods you talked about. And how do you think about and consider logistics?
Like
equipment, materials,
yeah.
And then just people, places, times. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your thought process for that?
Well, I think I'm fortunate. Similar to Jody Isaac, in that I have a designated classroom. So, I have a classroom computer that I can access different talks. I can show websites. Yeah, so the classroom computer and overhead projector screen
right.
are like key. I think, yeah, because it's a designated classroom, I can work in the circle. The students can leave their work there overnight because
right.
they're in the classroom 18 hours a week at minimum.
Right.
Plus, we have lab hours where they can come in other times a week, so they can leave their materials
right.
there, the binders, and we do vision boards. We do, you know, big maps. And what else? In terms of materials, yeah, flip chart paper, pens, I have an instructional assistant who works in the
right.
classroom. How many hours? 12 hours a week.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got to
yeah.
be a help. And there must be some thought and planning in terms of how you make the most of that person's, you know.
And she's worked in the program way longer than me.
Right.
Yeah.
So
she's...
There must be a lot of coordination there.
Yeah, it's a ton of coordination there in terms of if we need to move the tables around. Like, we'll change the circle into pods when we
right.
do, like, the multiple intelligences workshop
right.
or the... So we'll change the configuration of the room sometimes.
So that's another...
Mm-hmm.
Taking the space you have and making the most of it sounds
mm-hmm.
like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's an amazing space. I think applied, you know, it's applied learning, you know, when you have it's like a big workshop space where
right.
the students come
right.
and they experiment.
Okay, let's talk then about something that resonates. I mean, it makes perfect sense in the program that you're running,
mm-hmm.
but the idea of authenticity, connecting their experiences and what they're doing
mm-hmm.
with the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So in your case, there's a real target. It's
mm-hmm.
developing a career idea
mm-hmm.
and then a plan to maybe
right.
achieve that,
mm-hmm.
to go after that, to start
mm-hmm.
that career idea.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can talk a little bit, because your student, the activities are basically the foundation for the goal,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe authenticity is in terms of when you're thinking about tweaking your plan, tweaking your program,
mm-hmm.
how do you think about, like, making sure that it's real to the students?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're teaching them about the importance of self-knowledge in making their decision making, you know, the strength-based importance of knowing what their skills and strengths are, being able to speak those out loud to somebody else, you know, like the oracy that our guest speaker talked about on Friday at Conversations Day. So that we're also talking about, you know, what's the labor market like for certain careers that they're interested in? You know, we're kind of getting into the realm. We're asking them to vision what they want their future to be, but also develop a realistic plan to realize that vision. And so, and we're talking about, you know, the education that they need and things like next steps in education. So it's like, I use a lot of quotations in the class. Every day I have a quote in the classroom about that relates to the topic at hand. And but the other thing that makes it authentic is the guest speakers we bring in from the community. So, you know, because oftentimes the students are like, you know, they are critical thinkers. They're saying, is what you're teaching us part of the real world? You know, that's often a question they'll challenge me with. Right. And so the guest speakers really speak, because we have guest speakers who are in business. Recently we had the DJ Jeff Lingwood from Party People Sound Solutions.
Right.
We've had another guest speaker, Aviva Shul, from, she's a dog trainer from Baby Dog. And then we have, you know, instructors from the college come in and describe the different programs, and guests and graduate students of BEST.
Mm-hmm.
So what these guest speakers do that just, I'm so grateful for that, I don't have any plans about, is
right.
that they speak to exactly what we're talking about in the class, about the importance of building relationships to run your business, about always working to expand your skill set, about sometimes you can't get the job that, you know, is your direct passion, so you work peripherally in that area, right?
Right.
And that it's, when you meet people, you don't tell them, I want a job. You find out about them,
right.
You know? You ask questions and show your interest in them,
right?
So, and then they always talk about teamwork skills, you know? So the guest speakers who are out there in the community are coming in and speaking to that authenticity.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's change gears a little bit. Lots of instructors have various points, and it sounds like you do too, of reflection, various points of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
What reflective questions or practices do you have students consider once they've completed part of the program or even the whole program? Like, are there points,
mm-hmm.
Are there types of questions that you get them to see the change?
Yeah. So we're asking questions that tap into their stories throughout the whole program. But there are particular types of stories that we're asking questions about. Like, tell us about a time you accomplished something for which you feel proud. Tell me about a time you solved a problem. Tell me about a time you... And they're all, like, they're all interview questions, right?
Right.
So we're getting them throughout the term, reflecting on these and talking about them with each other. And then, so that when, at the very end of the program, when we talk about interview questions, difficult interview questions, they're ready for that, right?
Right.
Yeah. And the other points of reflection we're always talking about is just share some stories about your life experience, because, and we draw out, you know, what are you doing in a day that you love to do? And that's, tell us a story about that. So, and we draw out the skills and strengths. So someone loves sailing, you know, and there's a quiet student sitting in the corner, and they haven't spoken hardly a word, and I say, will you tell us a bit about, will you share a little bit about this sailing that you do? And then all of a sudden, this big story comes out, and, you know, they tell us about one of the toughest moments in that, and then it's like, okay.
Yeah,
and then
The
students, what skills and strengths did you just hear in that? And it's like, oh, what other work areas could you transfer that to?
Right.
You know, it's so generative. So, and reflection is so important, because especially with social anxiety, to call on them in the moment,
right?
They freeze up, you know, and I can relate to that, you know, when you're in the classroom and your instructor asks you a question, it's like, all of a sudden, your mind goes blank. So reflection to me is a key. Getting them to think and write or think overnight. Think about this overnight. I don't know if they do.
Right.
But then the next morning I have them do a little bit of writing about this.
Right.
Yeah.
Even just to take a break.
Absorb and come
back to it. Yeah. Sure. That sense of timing is important on the reflection too. Not be put on the stop to reflect, but to sort of have some time to generate that reflection.
Yeah. Or we'll have a guest speaker. Let's take a 10-minute break. They've been listening intently, asking questions. Let's take a break, bio break, come back. What reflections? What stood out for you from that talk?
Right. Yeah. And probably organically, students are going to start chatting.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they're out smoking.
They're gonna chat. Maybe some of it is not about the speaker, but some of it will be something caught their ear or their eye.
Yeah.
Can you pinpoint times or breaks when student reflection is really critical and maybe not planned, but nonetheless, you're like, oh, I think we need to think about this.
Well, the first thing that jumps into my mind is at the very end of the program, we do a next steps plan and we actually draw it out. It's called the PATH, Planning Alternative Tomorrows with Hope. But I've customized it with a few of my own additions.
Right.
Students customize it to their own.
Right.
But that's a whole process of reflection. Think about where you'd like to be 5 or 10 years from now. I used to give a question and answer reflection sheet at the end of the program.
As a way to
help them prepare for next steps after BEST.
Right.
And it was a question and answer, and it was, this was another thing I've honed over the years. Tried all kinds of different ways because the students weren't really enthusiastic
about it.
And it showed in their quality of the writing. And so I decided to do the big visual map PATH. And the feedback I get with this process is they're relieved.
Right.
They're relieved. We do it in class together. We use colorful markers, big paper.
Right.
And it's they see it, all their thinking. They like the intrigue of, because it starts 5 or 10 years and then it goes, their gifts, and then now, and then who to enroll, and what are you going to, what strengths do you need to build? What are you going to commit to in the next 3 months and then 30 days?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So they know that. So that's at the end. Throughout reflection, this is a reflection question?
Sure.
Is that what you're asking me?
They're all reflective practices.
Yeah. So the key one. Another key one is we do group guidelines at the very beginning. We talk about how are we going to be together in a way to make this a safe environment for people to take the risk to share their ideas, their opinions, or to try a new skill without feeling, embarrassed. And so in the middle of the program, we'll check in. So how are you doing on a scale of 1 to 10? How are you doing with these group guidelines? Which ones are you doing well with,
mm-hmm.
and what one might you like to focus on
right.
as we, carry on working together in this cohort?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's another key one, because it relates to teamwork. This is all
right.
about teamwork, skills and strengths, and it's, I acknowledge that it's just hard work to work together and be together 18 hours a week. And
So how does students, do you get moments where students reflect on a particular activity or series of activities, like simply questions like, how did today's stuff go? How does that impact your, when you're thinking about the future? Obviously, you seem deeply connected to your students in terms of your antenna is there and you're really listening, but also do you position things so that their feedback on hey, that was amazing, or I don't know, it left me not all that inspired.
Yeah. So every Friday we have Friday feedback. And so I ask them, what are the questions? But it's specific, three specific questions. Here it is. So every Friday, every Thursday, Zach does a Thursday review at the end of the day. So what did we cover together? Do you have any, just to go over, And then on Friday, that kind of warms them up for Friday. What learnings, insights, appreciations did you gain this week about yourself and working a member of a diverse team? What can the instructional team do to further support your learning? Please let us know if there's any confusions. And would you like a one-on-one appointment? Is that what you're
asking? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, every Friday that happens. Because I don't want them sitting silently. I know that it's hard to talk to us sometimes, and it's hard to say things in the group, so I want this written reflection as another modality for them to communicate with us regularly, so resentments or frustrations or fear doesn't build up, or that they go home on Friday really stressed out about something that we can resolve quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's also conflict resolution.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
To me, it's like...
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to turn now a little bit towards a little more about your sort of preparation and planning.
Yeah.
How do you prepare yourself to guide a day? Like, what's your process as you come in?
It's like, I say to myself, Diane, this is like being an Olympic athlete in training, teaching every day, like building myself up to be an energetic facilitator in the class. So I have to get to bed at 9:30.
Right.
I have to eat regular meals. Is this what you're asking? Yeah. I have to eat regular. And I have like a dance class on Wednesday. I get outside in fresh air because I'm inside all day.
Right.
So I get outside for fresh air after work, walking some friends' dogs and...
So it sounds like you take your idea of self-care as vital.
It's
to
vital,
you.
Yeah. It's absolutely vital, yeah. And I finish work at 4. I go home and enjoy some things, refresh. And then I'll do an hour of work, like 7:30 to 8:30. Look at my emails. I'll hone something because I'm doing the chair role too,
there's
a lot happening.
Right.
And then on Sunday night, I'll look at my emails. I'll look at what's coming up in the week.
Right, right.
I'll do, you know, if I have marking or whatever to do, I'll do that. So,
So you have a set plan.
Yeah. And, you know, I won't go to movies during the week. You know, I have to say no to some social engagement. My social life, my friends and family are really important. I try not to let work totally absorb me in that way. But I also do have to say no to some things too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I do I go in the classroom at night at the end of the day. I'll erase the board, put up the agenda for the next day, find the quote for the class. It's like one of my students said, you know, you have to get your head in the game so the prize will show, right?
Right.
It's like, yeah. And I arrive early. I arrive at 8 a.m. every day. The students... class doesn't start till 9, so I'll go in and set up anything in the room. And if depending on the type of group, some people arrive early, so I'll have conversations with them.
But
it'll be a time for me to get to know them a little bit better and have a little more conversation. I play music in the classroom in the morning before, as people are arriving.
Right.
Sometimes I'll put on the crackling wood fire, but I tried that, and then students started to feel sleepy.
Right. You're like, relax, but not this relax.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. How do you explain... Sometimes it's... some students really appreciate... They are going to ask you the question of why are we doing this, connecting to how we're doing this. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to get them to discover some new skill... Mm-hmm. And they might say, but why are we doing this? And how does that connect to what we're supposed to be learning? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can walk us through a little bit your process. Like, what's the connection between the why and the how?
Mm-hmm. Like the learning outcome?
Yeah.
So I, depending on the workshop, I'll be really explicit. I'll put the learning outcome on the board. Like, what you'll... Because I don't want them to hang out. You don't want to hang in the uncertainty of that. For conflict resolution, for example, I'll put the learning outcome on the board. Today we're going to, you know, and what else? It's sort of like, how do I design this? But if they ask me a question, I'll answer it directly.
Right.
And I'll use the skill of summarizing throughout the program. These are good questions. But I'll use the skill of summarizing throughout the program. Like, this is where we've been. This is, you know, in the... small amount of time. This is what we've covered. This is what we're doing. This is where we're going. So, for instance, I'll be introducing, I love this topic, information interviews as a strategic work search tool and skill that we can use throughout our life. And I'll say, I'll introduce the topic of information interviews, and I'll say, I'll umbrella it. We're learning this within the context, and we're going to, within the context of your lifespan, like this is a valuable tool throughout your lifespan, and we're going to talk about it today, what it is and what it's not, and we're going to practice it together. You're going to practice it safely with your friends and family, and then we'll get you warm contacts to to do it with other people in the community. So it's called the ZAP, calls it the ZPD, Zone of Proximal Development. So I'm trying to take them through all the different steps so they're not hanging in the anxiety of like, oh my God, information interviews, I'm going to have to talk to strange people. You know, I don't want them freaked out like that at the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of soothing and comforting, or I don't know if it's soothing, but
building confidence, maybe?
Yeah, contextualizing the usefulness of it, working the growth zone versus the panic zone. Yeah, so.
Let's talk about, there's always continuous improvement, and we've talked about this a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Recognizing that sometimes activities don't always go as planned, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's for the better, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's for the worse. Mm-hmm. How do you assess students' experience in light of your learning goal?
Yeah, so every Friday, the feedback, and at the end of every group, we also have a feedback form right here. It's right here, and it's all about... So, it's based on the learning outcomes of the articulated learning outcomes. The feedback is, but in the back it says, any additional comments, how helpful were the guests, suggestions to make best more effective.
Right.
So we fold these suggestions into everything. We had a student who has her undergraduate degree, and we do some math and English upgrading warm up skills.
Right.
Because some of them haven't been as to prepare to write the assessment, and she didn't really need that.
Right.
And even though I asked for Friday feedback, come and talk to us. She didn't tell us that until the end, that she didn't really need that, and she felt kind of bored sitting in some of that stuff. And so with this class, I made it the next run, I just made it explicit. If you feel like this is not useful for you, then you can go next door and work on the computers on your career research, So yeah, I'm just listening to those student feedback at the end, during and at the end, and tweaking things. Small tweaks as we go. Yeah, because it's, we're always working with such diverse people. What else? We did something new, this cohort. We got involved with Volunteer Victoria, and we went and volunteered on Valentine's Day with the mustard seed to serve a meal. In cooperation with a restaurant. And so that applied learning was the first run of it.
There's
a whole, I just said to you two or three sentences, but there was a whole process.
Oh, of course. So how was it a little different working with a community partner?
It was enriching. It's more organization. Especially the first run of something.
Right.
So lots of emails back and forth. Surveying the students, what kind of volunteering experience would they like to do. Getting commitment from the students, commitment from the organization. Showing up.
Right.
It was the first run for them, the mustard seed, with this event, with in collaboration with the restaurant, and then there was also a law firm there giving free law legal advice to the folks. So,
right.
And that was enriching because, right. You know, you take a risk and it, actually it turned out to be kind of cooler than I ever thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meeting new people. And the students had a good time. And, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing an activity and things don't go as planned, mm-hmm. do you have a reset button or a reset technique or some practice that you kind of fall to when you're like, oh, this isn't, and you can see it?
Mm-hmm.
What's your practice then?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, because certain things go on in the classroom, right? Maybe someone's having a really rough mental health day.
Right.
Maybe the group is really sick. Like, there's lots of people with sickness and low energy.
Right.
So they're, you can just see them out there like, ugh.
Right.
And it's like, okay, this isn't the right time to teach this. So.
Right.
I'll just say it, you know, like, well, if someone's in a rough mental health place and it's like coming into the classroom in a way that like feels somewhat disruptive, I'll call five minute
right.
break and try to pull something together, like see if my teaching assistant can come in if she's not in there, or
right.
And take the person for a walk, take the person down to counseling.
Right.
You know, that's like,
right.
That's the most stressful situation, I
think. Right, right.
If the group is low energy, they're not feeling well, I'll just stop and we'll do something else. We'll do some grounding, icebreaker or something in the center of the room.
Right.
And there's a couple of lessons, like I had this one kind of fun one about volunteering, international volunteering.
Right.
So I can show them websites and,
right.
you know, where you can stay with, you know, that kind of gets their interest up and stuff
right,
like
right,
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Their energy back
mm-hmm.
up.
Their energy back up. Yeah. I don't
okay.
know if that answers your
no,
question.
No, it does. There's a very, mm-hmm. there's, you have such a diverse style that it's intriguing to see all the different, the processes you use.
Yeah.
This may not apply perfectly, but I'll ask it. How do you structure your formative and summative assessments of the students? And I don't know if there are formative and summative assessments, mm-hmm. but if there are, what's your process?
Yeah. So, best is articulated as based on attendance. So the
right.
attendance says that they can't miss more than 4 days of class.
Right.
And, because it's building employment success.
Right.
And so I say it's like welding. You have to be here to see the weld, to hear about the weld, to see the weld, and then to practice the weld yourself.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that's how I introduce it at the beginning of the course. And so in terms of this, I'm still struggling with attendance and
yeah.
that articulation, because I have students who are in recovery from mental health issues, mental health crisis, in recovery from addictions, who get this past winter I've had students miss a couple of weeks because of illness, you know, like
right.
I'm still uncertain about this one.
Yeah.
How to manage this.
Right. And the flexibility you need to build around, because I'm mm-hmm. sure there's a million stories for every
mm-hmm. yeah.
some of them are, you know, if someone gets sick and what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Others are you taking this seriously enough? You know, this is
exactly.
So
most of them, I don't really, it's maybe one student a year that I'll see, one or maybe two at the outside. I haven't had one yet where I think they're blowing off the course.
Right, right, right.
I think these are legitimate
right.
stop outs.
Right, right. Well,
yeah.
Mental health problems.
Or addiction
right.
stuff. And actual illness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And depression.
So that causes a real challenge when you can only miss 4 days.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So I just encourage them to keep coming and just come and pick up where we are. And,
okay.
Sometimes I'll say to someone in the beginning of the term, if they've missed a lot, I really dislike it when someone misses the group guidelines.
Right.
Like I expect people to be there
right,
for that.
Right.
But sometimes I'll have if a student's missed too much at the very beginning, I'll just say, you know, why don't you withdraw and come back at another time? But then it's like, right. Oh, I really want to be here. No. So it's hard.
Yeah.
So the other pieces, we do have assignments, like a vision board assignment, vision board reflections, the listening is field assignment. They have to write a 3-point essay. They do an information interview with a family or friend member and hand in that.
Right.
They have to hand in an actual information interview they do with someone in the community that we've given them warm contacts for. They've generated warm contacts themselves. So there are those assignments that go through.
Right.
And it's basically just mostly strength-based feedback. Like, this looks great. Congratulations on accomplishing this. But when, there's no final grade, it's complete or incomplete based on attendance.
Right.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. The last piece is acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
How do you celebrate student transformation?
Yeah. So I actually am doing more of this throughout the cohort, like expressing explicitly my appreciation for them.
Right.
You know, on those days when they're really tired and, you know, just saying, I can see that you're really tired and I just really appreciate your courtesy, your listening, your attendance, you know what I mean?
Right.
Just express it. Or if, you know, I have a feeling when I'm working with them, I'll just, I feel like, okay, this has been a great day. I've been nervous at the beginning and then get in the groove with them and we do.
Right.
And I'll just say, well, I've enjoyed being with you today.
Right.
Just remembering their courage, the courage it takes for them to show up, like this fellow, young fellow with, you know, trying to grapple with schizophrenia and how he's going to, his disappointment about he can't function.
Right.
Normally, like his classmates, like just saying to him, I see your determination, I see your commitment, I see your kindness, mirroring back what I see. I see your disappointment. So can you repeat the question again?
So how do you celebrate student transformation?
And then we have a party at the end of each cohort. You know, every week we begin, I remember to say, it's great to see you here this morning, welcoming, you know, it's great to see you here. Remember that this is a success to be in the seat this morning. You know, you felt like you had the flu or you didn't want to get out of bed. Like, it's an accomplishment to be here. Not forgetting that, keeping that in sight.
Right.
Not taking it for granted. Because there's that other perspective, right? Like, kind of pull up your bootstraps and this is where I expect you to be here and not say anything about it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Right. No, I understand it well, actually. Are there any final thoughts you had? This interview is kind of kicked up around around applied learning or just kind of anything that's kind of on your front of mind.
Mm-hmm. I think it's enriching for all of us. Like, I don't think I could handle I don't think I could handle just lecturing and for an hour. And it's so engaging to get them up and moving around and talking to each other and hearing their thoughts. And you know, like the other day we were wrapping up and I teach a lesson on how not to get stuck after best. So we talk about, I ask them, what are you worried about or what are you stressing about in terms of your next, after this class is over, because they're going to lose the structure and the community and everything. And then I ask them to brainstorm what steps will you take not to get stuck together, right? And they come up with all these great ideas, really specific things, and then I show them what the experts say in career research about how not to get stuck. And their ideas are way more detailed and rich than, you know, the experts say, well, you know, you have your social supports,
you
manage time and, you know, all those great things. But their details that they come up with are way more interesting. And then we categorize them. We classify them. There it is. So, yeah, it's personally, I find it really, kind of stressful, but also, and requires a lot of energy and rest on my part, and also, but also really kind of thrilling.
Yeah. That's the thing about being an Olympic athlete.
A little bit of...
Being an Olympic athlete, you said initially, it's like being training for the Olympics.
Well, I have never been
an Olympic athlete,
but yeah, it's that discipline.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably use the skills of acting and, you know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Thank you very much for your time, Diana. I appreciate your insights and your devotion to your class.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Diana.